seasonal. Today's high 29. Tonight's low 23. Tomorrow's high 33. Looking ahead quickly, Friday okay. Cloudy, high at 28. Saturday, snow and blowing snow, a moderate amount of accumulation, a high of 26. Sunday, a high of 11 degrees. So enjoy this. 29 degrees now, Racine and Kenosha at 10 past 8. For WGTD News, I'm Dave McGrath. The Morning Show with Greg Berg is next.
Support for the Morning Show comes from Carthage College, welcoming approximately 150 full-time transfer students each year. Eligible Gateway graduates can receive guaranteed admission to Carthage to complete their bachelor's degrees. Transfer to a more personalized education in 4 easy steps. More information about admissions and competitive scholarships for transfers is available at carthage.edu/admissions/transfer. And we welcome you to the Wednesday Morning Show on WGTD. I'm Gregory Berg. I'm really happy to be sitting opposite Gwida Brown. It has been too long since we had Gwida Brown on the Morning Show. She is the Executive Director of the Hope Council for Alcohol and Other Drug Abuse. And this is a very important agency that works with people in our community who are dealing with addiction of one kind or another. And we're going to really specifically focus in today on alcohol abuse, and we're going to make sure to take some time to talk about the really thorny issue of DUI, driving under the influence, and OWI, operating while under the influence, and the laws that are currently in place in Wisconsin, and a proposal that is floating around that could potentially change the way those laws are written and enforced. And those are changes that Gwida Brown has some concerns about that we are going to discuss. And sort of overlaying everything is the fact that Wisconsin remains either the worst or one of the worst states in the union when it comes to the level of alcohol addiction, alcohol abuse. And that has consequences that we can't really even begin to calculate. And fortunately, Gwida and her colleagues at the Hope Council are doing what they can in this part of the state to help address the situation as best they can. And this conversation is part of that. Gwida Brown, we welcome you back to the Morning Show.
Thanks for having me, Greg. I appreciate it.
Really glad to have you here. Let's start first with the work that the Hope Council does. And how long have you been there?
I am celebrating my 10th year, my 10th anniversary as of January 29th.
Oh, my. Yeah. Well, this was a well-timed visit then. Happy anniversary to you.
Thank you.
Explain, for the sake of any listeners who don't have maybe direct acquaintance with the Hope Council, exactly who and what you are.
So we... Our mission is to reduce the impact of alcohol and other drug abuse in our community through education, prevention, intervention, and referral services. Most people know us as the agency they have to go to if they reside in Kenosha County and they get an OWI, and we're the assessment agency. So we assess people and then decide if they need education or treatment, and we send them out to do one of those things, and we case manage those people. We also do a lot of education. We have programming for people who are newly in recovery. We have a Friends Give Hope program for people. It's a recreational program for people who are newly in recovery. We have a loved ones program for people who are affected by a loved one's substance use disorder, a support group. We do a supervised visitation program, not specific to people who have substance use disorders, but just a need that we see in our community. A lot of other ancillary services. So I like to think of us as the little agency that could.
Small but mighty.
Yes, absolutely.
And mighty certainly in your impact. Let's talk for a moment about what I touched on in the introduction, which is the fact that Wisconsin just overall seems to be a state in which this situation, that is that of alcohol abuse and addiction, is especially acute. Explain to what extent that is true and in what ways that is true.
The culture of drinking in Wisconsin is just unbelievable. That there's an expectation that everyone's going to drink. I personally don't get it because I don't drink, and I don't understand how we're just consumed with it. We talk about how it's different here than it is in other places. And I don't think people who are from other places realize how different it is here. Hmm. That we have baby showers in taverns. Hmm. And that we have birthday parties where for babies, for little kids, where alcohol is prominent. That we trick-or-treat with alcohol in our hand walking down the street. That people, when you trick-or-treat, people will give you shots or alcohol because they're giving your children candy. There's just the alcohol use and the expectation is just so prevalent here. We're all, patting ourselves on the back because of the 20 drunkest cities, Wisconsin had 12 of them.
Wow.
Yeah, and it's a huge problem. It's a huge problem for modeling to children what is appropriate behavior, and that cycle just continues and continues. And I have finally come up with a response that probably isn't. I think in analogies, either memes or analogies, but analogies in that when people talk so much about drinking, there's, again, this expectation that everyone else around them is going to be comfortable with it, or everyone else around them is also a drinker like they are. And I'm tired of it. I was at an event for high school children, high school students on Saturday, and somebody came in pushing a cart. They had like continental breakfast on it. And she said, "Would you like coffee or water or orange juice? Oh, gosh, I'm sorry. We don't have any Bloody Marys. But, oh, you could have a mimosa. Did anyone bring their flask?" And I was wearing my Hope Council shirt. And I said, "Oh, you know what? I work for the Hope Council on Alcohol and Other Drug Abuse. I'm just going to pass, okay?" And then I finally came up with this analogy where I'm going to just start talking about sex when people talk about alcohol. Because evidently alcohol is that conversation everyone can have. So I'm just going to start talking about, when people start talking about all the different things that they drink, I'm going to start talking about sexual positions that people should want to talk about, because it makes me uncomfortable that people talk about alcohol the way that they do. And I just think it makes sense to make other people uncomfortable. And my thinking is, well, you think everyone must want to drink, then I think everyone must want to have sex, right? So let's have that conversation. And I just don't know where we got to the point. There's a statistic that 44% of adult Americans don't drink in any given month. 44%. Now, I know that's a perception that in Wisconsin we don't have, but that's a pretty good, that's a pretty good ratio. Mm-hmm. So the idea that we should just assume that everyone is going to be drinking and everyone is going to be comfortable with those conversations. And again, that message that sends to our young people, that everyone should be drinking and everyone should be drinking in excess. Like, we don't have any idea what appropriate drinking is. When people say, drink responsibly, we don't know what that means.
Right.
One drink for a woman is actually a level that raises her risk for cancer. Two drinks for a man. So if any given day, if a woman, so healthy drinking is anything under one drink for a woman, under two drinks for a man, any given day. And when you say that to somebody, they're like, well, that's sheer nonsense. Mm-hmm. And you don't get to bank those drinks. So you don't get to drink seven drinks in one day and say, well, I stuck with my healthy use pattern because I only drank seven in a week. It doesn't work that way. So.
Right. What you were talking about in terms of when there is this culture and then this expectation that everybody drinks and everybody should talk about drinking and there's something wrong with you if you're uptight about drinking or resistant to the idea, it reminds me of of what has proven to be a problem at a place like Carthage and
right.
certainly other college campuses all across the state, which is that often there is this perception that everybody drinks, and so that student that in fact doesn't drink, isn't particularly interested in drinking, is made in one way or another to feel like something's wrong with them.
Right.
And they just get swept along in it. But because there is this strong sense of presumption made, that so often can kind of carry the day. And,
yep.
and that seems especially potent for whatever reason here in Wisconsin.
Yes, exactly. And again, that's the huge problem because we socialize in bars. There's this expectation that if you aren't drinking along with your friends, if you can't keep up with your friends, then there's something wrong with you. You're not as much fun as they are, whatever that is. And so then the addiction, then the abuse comes in, the problems that stem from that. Again, not to mention just the regular health problems that come from drinking too much.
Right, just period. Do we know very much, Guida, about if there are particular parts of the state where this is especially serious? And also demographically, are we talking about certain age groups or men versus women or economic class? Or does this seem more to be a pervasive problem and it doesn't much matter where you live, urban or rural, or rich or poor, or black or white, or man or woman, gay or straight, none of that particularly matters in terms of whether or not you may, in fact, be prone to alcohol abuse.
So, obviously, addiction runs across all of those demographics, but there are pockets that are going to be more affected. The homosexual population has greater abuse rates. Women used to have less, but now it's getting higher because of that sense of I need to be able to drink like a man, and the idea that I should be able to and can. And the fact of the matter is, we can't. Women's bodies don't metabolize alcohol the same way that men's do, and so the addiction rates happen quicker, and the health problems happen quicker as well. Rural. I wouldn't say it happens greater, but again, those pockets where there's absolutely nothing to do in certain pockets, you're going to see greater levels of problems there. Economically, it's really kind of across the board. I would say that there you're going to have pockets in certain populations, but economically, there's still a huge problem across the board. Races, same. Used to be Hispanics had lower, but again, we're seeing those rates rise. It's just a huge problem. This idea that we should all be drinking.
For those of you just joining us, I'm speaking today with Guida Brown, who is executive director of the Hope Council for Alcohol and Other Drug Abuse, an agency here in Kenosha that is right in the trenches contending with the most serious effects of this problem that we were just talking about, namely that drinking and excessive drinking is so much a part of the culture of Wisconsin. And Wisconsin is one of the drunkest states in the country. We have, you said, I think 12 out of the 20
yes.
drunkest cities in the country. And it's just embarrassing to think about that. Is Kenosha one of those cities, by the way?
It is not. Kenosha
okay.
is not.
All right. Well, maybe the Hope Council has something to do with
yeah.
that. At any rate, in fact, I wanted to ask you, Guida, before we get into some of the other things we want to talk about today, does every, for instance, every county in Wisconsin have something like the Hope Council? I'm sure it's not called the Hope Council, but do those agencies exist everywhere and operate in the same way or roughly the same way as the Hope Council does?
So every county is required to have an assessment agency, but they don't necessarily do everything that we do, or they do more than we do, but they're not specific to each county. So up north, there are counties that, or there are agencies that cover three or four counties.
Mm.
Which is another problem for those rural areas where they have to go farther for the services.
Right, that would be a problem. So one of the reasons why we are having a conversation today, not just to celebrate your 10th anniversary with Hope Council, which I just found out about today, but is because of some very specific issues and concerns related to the matter of DUI and OWI. And of course, DUI is driving under the influence, OWI operating while under the influence. I think the distinction there is DUI, the car needs to be moving. OWI, I think the car can just be sitting there, but if you are impaired, you can be charged with OWI.
I think the distinction is Illinois and Wisconsin. I don't think we call it DUI in Illinois, in Wisconsin. I think everyone, if ever I hear a DUI, I say, oh, are you from Illinois? And they go, yeah. I go,
oh, interesting.
We just call it OWI in Wisconsin.
So we call it OWI here in Wisconsin. Okay, so maybe that's more the distinction, at least here in the state of Wisconsin. So there is, we should maybe lay out, first of all, without getting into too much detail, in a sense, in general, what the layout is of the law for OWI in Wisconsin. Under what circumstances can somebody be pulled over, and typically what are they facing?
Okay, Greg, I am not a law enforcement officer. So the driving with a .08 or higher is impaired driving. .08 blood alcohol content, which, of course, somebody, if you're driving down the road, they're not going to know that you have a .08. So you have to do something wrong to be pulled over. There has to be something wrong with your car to be pulled over.
Swerving or whatever, yeah.
Or a tail light that's out or something. And that, so there has to be a reason to be pulled over. So what the first OWI in Wisconsin is a citation. It's a ticket. It's like you didn't buckle your seatbelt or you got an OWI.
Through a stop sign.
Yep, you blew through a stop sign.
So it's a driving infraction, like a traffic infraction.
Right. And we're the only state in the nation that still has just a ticket for the first OWI.
If one is pulled over after that, a second or a third or a fourth time, what are we talking about then?
Misdemeanor for the second one. Third one is still a misdemeanor. Now, this can all change if you get in an accident, if you hurt somebody, if you have somebody who's younger than 16 in the car. All of that is going to change. But then typically the fourth becomes a felony across the board.
Right. So one of the things that has drawn your attention and your concern is a proposal for a change in the OWI laws here in Wisconsin. Alberta Darling apparently is one of the people behind this proposed change. I think Jamaat is another. Explain what their proposal, at least as far as you understand it, would do.
So every couple of years this gets floated, and this is that the first offense, OWI, would become a misdemeanor. It would be, making it a misdemeanor would mean that it's going to go through the courts, whereas right now they don't necessarily go through the courts. You can just, it's a ticket, so you can pay your ticket.
And which is what most people do, of course.
And it also changes where the money goes. So if it becomes a misdemeanor, it goes through the courts, which is, it becomes a state offense, versus right now it becomes it's a municipal offense, and it stays with the municipality. So the money stays in your municipality versus it staying with the state, or more of it going to the state.
Interesting. So right now, in Kenosha, you're pulled over, charged with OWI, you're given a ticket, given a fine, and you go pay that fine, and that money goes into the coffers of Kenosha itself.
Right. And the city of Kenosha, if the city of Kenosha who's pulled you over. If you were pulled over in Pleasant Prairie, it stays with them.
Right. And under this change, then, at least most of the money would be going to the state, because we're talking about an entirely different kind of offense, in
right.
a sense.
Exactly. Yep. Yeah, so it becomes a misdemeanor. Now, because of that, it also is much more prone to getting clogged up in the courts. People are going to fight it. And because of that, more people are going to have those charges dropped. So right now, that first offense, because it is just a ticket, people are less inclined to fight about it. The DOT and the system that we have in place, the Department of Transportation, it's pretty strong. We have a lot of ability to get that first offense convicted. If this moves forward, there probably won't be as much ability to do that. People will, there'll be a lot of lawyers talking, a lot of things going on behind the scenes that a lot of those first offenses will be dropped, which in the big picture affects the second and the third and the fourth offenses. So I'm not a lawyer. I'm not a law enforcement officer. I don't know. I'm not saying it's a good thing or a bad thing. It's just not. Wisconsin does a really good job with assessment and case management, and Kenosha does a particularly good job of that. And so whether or not it's a misdemeanor or a citation doesn't affect those things. It's not going to make people go to jail longer. It's not going to give you a larger fine necessarily just by making it a misdemeanor. And so I guess that's kind of the message I want to get out, that saying, you know, we want to be tough on crime. We want to make this, you know, it's not right that this is just a citation. That's not really going to solve the problem. It could, because it could change the entire structure, but it also doesn't have to. And so it just changes how it's charged. And so now, right now, we don't see people's first offenses on CCAP. So maybe it would be easier to track them for John Q. Public. I can see him through my system for work. You know, do you need to see that somebody had a first offense OWI? I don't know. But again, it's not necessarily going to change the impact of the consequences.
Right. So there's a couple of things for us to talk about. One of them is the notion that right now we don't do anything with the first offense. So I know you want to address that issue. We'll talk about that in a second. I think one of the other concerns that you're raising is that when you make that first charge a misdemeanor, which is what the proposal is, then we're talking about many more cases than are the case now, where ultimately that case will entirely be dropped. That charge will be dropped altogether. And then there really will be, presumably, little or no consequences whatsoever for that first offense. And so in a sense, the intended effect of this will be, at least in many cases, exactly the opposite.
Exactly. And it clogs up the courts. Again, we see a lot of, on driving records, we see a lot of things like driving over a walk. And anytime I see, no one ever gets ticketed for driving over a walk. So anytime I see driving over a walk, I think, oh, what'd that get dropped from? That was absolutely never the initial ticket. Or when you see like a broken speedometer or a dirty windshield, I was like, that used to be something else. And so those are the kinds of things that these would turn into. Mm. And that would be very problematic.
Right. But let's talk about the other matter, which I think is of real importance. And this is something to which you can especially speak to in a way that most people can't. And that is that matter of the first offense carrying no consequences whatsoever outside of a ticket. Right. And you yourself said that Wisconsin remains the only state in the union that treats the first offense in that way. I think you're here to say that, in fact, there is much more to it than just that piece of paper, just that ticket, and just that fine being paid. So what is there beyond that ticket that occurs when someone is pulled over for their first OWI offense?
So we require, in Wisconsin, we require that they have the assessment. And like I said, every county has to have an assessment agency. We're it for Kenosha County. If you reside in Kenosha County, you have to come to the Hope Council to be assessed for an OWI.
So even that first one that's just a ticket, you still go to the Hope Council?
Yep. So through court order, back 2010, 2011 and prior, there was a loophole. And if you had a 0.09, you didn't have to be assessed. If you had a 0.08 or a 0.1 and higher, you had to, but a 0.09, you didn't. So they closed that loophole. I don't know how that ever happened, but they closed that loophole. So absolutely everybody has to be assessed. So just right there, it's not just a ticket. And the assessment process is that we're determining if somebody needs education or if they need treatment. And so they talk to a trained assessor. We determine, do they need 20 hours of education? If it's a first offense, 20 hours of education at Gateway. Or do they need treatment? Do they have a substance use disorder? And then we decide, we send them off to those one of those two things. For in Kenosha County, we also have a victim impact panel. So they go and they listen to people who've been affected by their own or someone else's impaired driving. It's a one-time only event, so just so that they can get a feel for what could have happened to them. And one of the things that I'm really proud of also in Kenosha County is that we do direct biomarker testing for anyone who goes to treatment. So if they have one offense and they go to treatment and more than 50% of our clients are assessed in need of treatment, they then have to come back to us to prove that we give them an abstinence order. So we say during the duration of your driver's safety plan, you cannot use any mood-altering substances that are not prescribed by a doctor. After they're done with their treatment, they come back to us, they give us fingernail clippings, and we send them to a lab, and we verify were they remaining abstinent from mood-altering substances.
Wow.
Yeah, and it's, to me, what that is, it's not a gotcha. It's really a means to help people understand how significant their problem is. If they come in and tell us, I know I have this problem, and I'm going to struggle with it, then we're able to provide so much more support to them. If they come in and say, I'm surprised I have this problem, I don't believe I have this problem, if the determination ends up being, well, but we think you need to go to treatment, and they end up having a positive test because they continued to use or because they used more than they thought they did, that's really a wake-up call to them to say, your problem's way more significant than you think it is. Mm-hmm. And we're here to help you get through it, not we're here to strip you of your driving privileges for the rest of the year or to take more money from you or to, make your life a living hell. That's not the point of this. The point is really to help people recognize the problem and to get them the help that they need. And I'm just really proud of the work that we're doing at the Hope Council because most of the counties aren't doing that. But they are sending them to the treatment and they are getting them the education. But the fact that we're really able to hone in on how significant the problem is for our folks really makes a difference.
Right. And can change their attitude then
about
appreciating that.
With our people who have three offenses and more, we actually do more tests over the course of the year. And so I can see what their test results were. If they come back, typically they'll be positive for the first one and then the next two will be negative. And I always say to myself, made a difference for that one. Because it is. That's a huge thing that they were able to abstain for this duration of the driver safety plan. And again, now every other state in the nation doesn't do this. No other state does. We have a few counties in Wisconsin, but no other state is doing testing the way we're doing testing in Wisconsin at all. And I think, what good is that? So you're saying to somebody, here, don't use substances anymore. Good luck. Mm. And they're going out and
sending them out the door.
Yeah, and hoping that they're not using substances. In Illinois, they have a very ritualistic, you have one OWI, here's what your plan is. Oh, you have two OWIs, here's what your plan is. They don't, the assessment happens, but it's much more broad. It's much less tailored to the individual. Ours are very tailored to every single person that we see. And to me, that makes a huge difference. Mm. We do the case management specific to the individuals that we see, not just, the number of OWIs that a person has.
Right. And so you're really trying to look at what this person is grappling with.
Yes.
Maybe the severity level or just kind of the nature of what's going on, and then trying to tailor a program for them.
Right.
That really makes sense. Can you tell us more about how this matter of assessment actually happens in terms of kind of the nuts and bolts of it? What's involved in that assessment process?
So in Wisconsin, we use a tool that's specific to Wisconsin. the Hope Council has been the assessment agency since assessments came into being. So I think it was in the 80s, maybe the late 70s, early 80s. And so the assessment tool is called the Wisconsin Assessment of the Impaired Driver. And we have a training through the state of Wisconsin that's called the IDP approved training, the Intoxicated Driver Program approved training. So they send us through this approved training course to use this tool, and you have to have the proper credentials to do that. And they're individual assessments. People come in and we ask them just, it's really, the tool that we use isn't a screening tool. So we have to ask questions to be able to screen on the tool itself. So it's not, it doesn't give us questions and then we just check box. It's more about having a rapport, building a rapport with a client and being able to ask the questions and really getting to, is this person, because it's all face value, is this person telling me the truth? We also look at, like I mentioned, the driving abstract, knowing what else has happened in this person's life. We look at CCAP to see what else is going on.
And what does that mean again,
CCAP? Yeah. It's the Wisconsin Circuit Court abstract access. So it's a, if you actually type in Wisconsin Circuit Court, it's everybody's records.
So it's a database.
Wisconsin, yep. And it's all public record. And so we look those up to make sure that we have a better picture of what our client is going through. So, and then we have 10 years of records on all of our clients as well. So when somebody comes in and we've assessed them in the past, we can pull that record. We know what's going on. If they're a brand new client, we really try to do a good job of getting information. We get, now we require that they bring in their criminal complaint so that we have a better idea of what the arrest looks like. So they can't just tell us, you know, this is the story versus this is really what happened.
Right. So you are, in other words, this assessment process is not just dependent on their own honesty and self-disclosure. Because, of course, you've already touched on the fact that people have sometimes a limitless capacity to be dishonest about themselves and the problems that they might have.
Right.
So
yeah, so we do our best effort of making sure that we have the full picture of them. And that's not to say that we're always getting the full picture the way we need it. Sometimes we still don't get, you know, sometimes we still don't get the whole story the right way, and they may not be assessed that the way that they should be. They then get sent to Gateway, and then there's another screening there where the teacher will say, wait, this person doesn't belong here, or they can be then referred back to us. I actually have a case right now where when the person comes in, we have to do an additional assessment to put her back where she belongs because of that sort of a scenario. It's not, you know, it is kind of face value, but we try to gather all of the documents to make sure that we are getting a better picture than just what somebody wants us to see.
Right. You are brought in sort of, it's an automatic thing when we're talking about alcohol affecting somebody's driving. So that's a very clear mechanism that brings them to the Hope Council or brings you into the picture. I'm just curious, what about when alcohol is an issue in other matters, such as, for instance, when we're talking about maybe domestic violence or domestic abuse or child neglect or something like that, where alcohol is clearly a very significant factor, maybe even a cause of other wrongdoing that's going on. Is there a mechanism in which the Hope Council is sort of automatically brought into the picture in those scenarios or not? Might it still happen, but not necessarily?
It can happen. It won't necessarily, but there are a couple means that would happen. Probation agents could refer to us for an assessment. Family court could refer to us for an assessment. And there's also a misdemeanor diversion program through the DA's office where we could be referred to for an assessment. And in particularly with the misdemeanor diversion program, we do the same sort of case management that we do with our intoxicated driver program. So that those services, the nail tests, we're really doing that same sort of case management as well.
We're speaking with Guida Brown, who is Executive Director of the Hope Council for Alcohol and Other Drug Abuse. This agency in Kenosha does an amazing job of dealing with people who are dealing with addiction of one kind or another. And we're spending most of our time talking about the work that the Hope Council does in assessing people who have been charged with OWI, operating under the influence, and talking about what happens, particularly with that first offense. We're talking about in light of a proposal that maybe the first offense might be dealt with differently than it is right now. And we're trying to paint a picture of just what a complicated question it is about what to do with that first offense. In getting prepared for this conversation, I ended up learning a term I had not ever seen before, and then you mentioned it in passing, I think, before we went on the air. The term is boosting.
Right.
And it touches on the fact that we're not always talking about just alcohol. And, of course, Hope Council for Alcohol and Other Drug Abuse. So let's talk for a moment just about boosting and what boosting has to do with somebody being pulled over for OWI.
Right. So typically when we think of OWI, or specifically DUI, we think of drinking alcohol. We think of drunk driving.
Mm-hmm.
And boosting is the effect of typically marijuana, but any other drug, and alcohol on driving skills. Marijuana mixed with alcohol has a horrible effect on the ability to drive a car. So drinking and driving is terrible. Marijuana by itself in driving is bad, but it's bad in a different way than drinking is.
Mm.
But together with alcohol and marijuana, horrible effects. So we see a lot of people now. We see about 50% of our drivers have other drugs on board. They're not just drinking. They're drinking and using something else.
Wow.
But we're seeing, I'd mentioned earlier just to you that the 0.08 is what we refer to as the legal limit of driving for a BAC, a blood alcohol content. But really what that is the illegal limit. You cannot drive and be a 0.08. People who are stopped on average in Wisconsin are stopped with a 0.16. So it's twice the legal limit, yeah. What we're seeing now, though, is a lot of people who are being stopped at really low levels. So they'll get a 0.08 or a 0.1. And when I see those low BACs, I know that there was another drug on board, because people don't get stopped at those low levels typically and have an OWI, because their driving just wouldn't be that bad. We're seeing a lot more that they had another drug. They were under the influence of another drug, and then they had drinking too. And so the reason that we see a BAC level at all is because the breath test is the easiest test to do.
Hmm.
And if you can get a positive test for that, they don't have to do a blood test. And so we're not necessarily seeing all of the true results of what all the drugs are on board. We just see that they had a positive breath test.
Right. So how much does it complicate the work that you and your staff do with somebody when they are brought in and there is something other than alcohol in the mix?
Only a little. The WADE, the assessment tool that I talked about that we use to do the assessments, was actually developed specifically for alcohol. And so that started being a little tricky. We're good assessors, and so that's not really an issue for us. The testing that we do is wonderful, and so that's really a great tool. The thing that ends up being tricky is the clients who come in with their OWI for alcohol. they tell us that they use other drugs, and then they get mad because they say, well, why can't I? Why are you telling me I can't use other drugs? I only came in here for alcohol. I'm like, no, that doesn't work that way. So that's really the only issue. And my answer is always because the DOT says we can. Because we're essentially an arm of the DOT, and they say that we can test you for all substances of abuse, not right. just alcohol.
You were telling me before we went on the air that actually some kind of change has been made, which actually, in a sense, changes the role of the DOT. I think maybe it's particularly when we get to these fourth offenses where really serious consequences come into play. Do you just want to explain that?
Yeah, well, I'm going to explain it the best I can, which is not that great. So as of December 1st, a fourth offense that happened within 15 years of the third offense causes driving revocation for life. And for life is in quotation marks, because after 10 years, a person can apply to get an occupational license. This law was passed. I almost feel like it was passed in the dead of night without any of us having, like, all of us who worked in the field had no input, had no idea it was being passed until all of a sudden we saw it. So, and we just found out, literally just found out, that it's not a change in the law. It's a change in the administrative law. So the courts are going to handle it the same way they always did, which is a 2 to 3 year revocation. But the Department of Transportation is going to be implementing a lifetime revocation, which impacts, I mean, obviously it impacts the drivers, and it impacts them in a state where public transportation's not overly fluid and useful and available. That's going to be a problem. But it also impacts when people are trying to come to us and get the driver's license back, and we potentially are the bearer of the bad news, or taking their money and having issues with, wait, we took your money, but you're never going to get your license, and those kinds of things. So it just went into effect December 1st, and we're just now, like this was last week, we're just now finding out the real impact and the real ramifications of this. We don't even know what's going on, and it's already sort of in law, and we don't know what's going to happen.
Wow. So you've learned about this after the fact.
Yeah.
Wow. So that's interesting. So I guess what it means is now the DOT itself is given, in a sense, a new kind of authority, and they will be in a position to say, nope, not only does your license get revoked, but then they will refuse to issue you a new license.
Yeah.
I mean, you just won't get that new license from the DOT. And in that respect, it doesn't matter what the courts say, because...
And that's the tricky part, yeah. So the DOT has always had a lot of authority, which is why... Again, why this first ticket is not as wishy-washy as we sort of have the idea that it is. And driving is a privilege, not a right. And when people say, yeah, but this happened, yeah, but the DOT says you don't get to do that, it's really not about, even when the court says, you know, this is going to happen for this long. Like, an example that just came up, when people go into non-compliance with a driver safety plan, if they go into non-compliance 2 times for the driver safety plan, no, you know, I'm not going to use that one. If somebody gets 2 OWIs in a year period, they automatically lose their license for a year. Automatically. It has nothing to do with what the courts say. It's what the DOT says. So I could go out right now and get a OWI, and then I can go out in a week and get another OWI. I'm not adjudicated. The court, I'm guilty because the DOT says I'm guilty, not because the court says I'm guilty.
Right.
The DOT has always had a lot of authority. It becomes a little tricky, again, because driving is a privilege. So this, you're right. Now, the courts don't have the say to say you can have your license back. It's about what the DOT is going to do.
Right. And if the DOT won't give you that piece of paper, that then it doesn't matter what the court says.
And the law was written that it's not just about driving under the influence. It's also about having different kinds of tickets and these other things that could happen that would negate your ability to even get an occupational after that 10-year period. So it's really kind of tricky, which is why we've been instructed not to say anything. Don't try to help people. Okay. But I mean, it's really tricky. And it'll be real interesting to see how the impact. The other piece of this is that it affects, I did the math on it, and my math could be wrong, so I'm not great at math, a journalism degree. But it's about 6% of the impaired driving population in Wisconsin have four or more OWI. So it's not a huge number that this is impacting anyway, but still, it's a number, so we'll see.
Right, wow. In the last couple of minutes, I want to give you a chance to reiterate what I think was the main point you wanted to make today, which you've already made, but I just want to give you a chance to just kind of restate it, which is that when somebody is given that first OWI or commits that first OWI and they receive just a ticket, in fact, there is more than just the ticket. Remind our listeners of what happens in those effects, in those instances, and specifically when it happens in Kenosha, and it is the Hope Council that is part of the situation.
So everyone in Wisconsin needs to have an assessment. With every OWI that happens, they have to have an assessment. They come to the Hope Council. They get assessed. We determine if they need education or treatment. We also require that they attend a victim impact panel. We also, if anyone goes to treatment, we also do a direct biomarker test to determine abstinence. And then we case manage them through their driver safety plan to make sure that they are doing what they're supposed to be doing and that they're going to treatment and they're doing all the things that we said they had to do in order to maintain their driving privileges. So they, and then whatever the court has said. So they also have to pay that ticket. If they happen to have any jail time for that first offense, if there were some other extenuating circumstances, all of that still happens, even though it is just a ticket. So it's not, again, making it a misdemeanor may work. It doesn't necessarily make the punishment any greater and the consequence any greater.
Right. And I think what you really want to make sure people understand is that this question should not be approached simplistically, and it particularly should not be approached with the misunderstanding that nothing happens, that there are no consequences with that first offense.
Right.
That in fact there are offense or consequences, and it is treated very seriously.
Absolutely, yeah. It's you're not just paying your ticket and then walking away. That it doesn't work that way.
Right, particularly here in Kenosha with the Hope Council on board. Guida, if people want more information about all that the Hope Council offers, I assume there's a website they can
there
visit.
There is. We just did a new website. It's awesome. Westwards helped us with that. So hopecouncil.org. Council is C-O-U-N-C-I-L. Hopecouncil.org.
Very good. And at the helm for 10 years now,
10 years.
Guida Brown. Guida Brown, I really appreciate you joining us today on the morning show and offering up so much interesting and helpful information. I really do appreciate it. And
thanks,
best
Greg.
Wishes to you and everyone doing such great work at the Hope Council.
Thank you.
Tomorrow on the morning show, we will be welcoming into our studios three people who are very closely involved with the Foxconn development. We will have with us Mount Pleasant Village President David DeGroot, Village Administrator Maureen Murphy, and Foxconn Project Director Claude Lois. And I think we're going to get a whole lot of questions answered about Foxconn, and I hope that you will make a special point of listening tomorrow. And then we're going to have some fun on Friday as well with author Ryan Robinson, who's written an interesting book called #Chill, Turn Off Your Job and Turn On Your Life. Great advice for workaholics. Support for the Morning Show comes from Carthage College, welcoming approximately 150 full-time transfer students each year. Eligible Gateway graduates can receive guaranteed admission to Carthage to complete their bachelor's degrees. Transfer to a more personalized education in four easy steps. More information about admissions and competitive scholarships for transfers is available at carthage.edu/admissions/transfer. This is WGTD HD, Kenosha, Racine, Elk.